and welcome back to Star Trek Discovery Pod, a sometimes funny, trying to be smart podcast covering all things new and classic Trek. Already making a cocktail, Bobcat. I'm your captain, Mariah Gossett. With Beyond the View screen, we have...
Oh, see, I had a good one. Like, it was like communicating through farts, Paul Sitachit.
And Clyde will be here in just a few moments. He's just stuck in the pattern buffer, but he shall be here soon. We have been returning through our namesake and rewatching Star Trek Discovery in preparation for its final season, which is just 2 weeks away. Can you believe that?
2 weeks away? No, I can't believe that.
It's so soon. So soon. So this week we are recapping and discussing the last half of season 4, episodes 7 through 13, so that we can be fully prepared and ready to go for this new season. But first, just a couple of reminders. Paul, where can people like find links to share with friends and other people they want to tell the show about?
Yeah, like, you know, for listeners, I'm messing up already. listeners, subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, YouTube. All links are at StarTrekPod.co. And if you love, like, hate, detest, really feel offended by our content, but you want to, you know, support us, consider Patreon for $2 an episode at patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
Indeed. And if you are hanging out with us live tonight on YouTube, you can participate in the chat with capital P, capital O, capital D, capital Pod in the comment. We'll take note of that. We'll see what you're chatting about. And we'll discuss, answer questions, comments, concerns, and maybe bring your comment up on screen. Just a few things to plug for the Patreon. I'll just say I'm going to be a really nice host, and I think we're going to review an episode that has something to do with season 5 for our patron episode this month. We had been discussing doing a Section 31, but I think I have a better idea of an episode. So if you are one of our patrons, you should keep an eye out for that. It'll perhaps give you some enlightenment and necessary pieces of information that'll be helpful going into season 5. Ooh, I'm not breaking embargo rules, I promise. yes, other announcements while we're waiting for Clyde to get out of the pattern buffer. Next week, our lovely friends, Strange New Pod and the Dura Sisters podcast are hosting the Last Days of Disco Festival over on their channels. So Strange New Pod's YouTube and the Dura Sisters podcast, traditional RSS feed. We'll be having a ton of special content celebrating all things Star Trek Discovery. We are participating. So this episode that we're recording tonight, hey everyone, if you're listening and you're new to us, we hope you enjoy our review and recap. This will replay over there next week. And then I am also participating on the Star Trek Captains discussion panel. I'll be chatting it up about Burnham. And I know I posted on social and I think on our patron channels. I would love to know what Captain Burnham has meant to you, because I want to share some of your thoughts and opinions during that panel. So tune in if you want some extra Star Trek content over the next week while we're waiting with bated breath for season 5 to start. All right. That was a lot of talking. I think it might be time for us to dig into some...
Rara Rapid Riker.
Some Rapid Rikers, some seasoned freaks, if you will. Paul, what did you think about the back half of the season?
I think overall it has some really good VFX.
Yeah.
And the production value is high, and I really love that they're kind of like crystallizing Burnham's character in a way, mm-hmm. you know, who she is. I feel like like plotting wise, it feels a little messy, you know, like giving everyone, like they did it well with Brave New World, Strange New World, with mm-hmm. giving everyone their moments. For whatever mm-hmm. reason, like when they tried to give everyone their moments in season 4, it feels a little, oh, there he is. Oh my God, look at that red mic. Red alert, everyone. Red alert.
Red alert. Clyde is on the bridge. What's up, Clyde?
Just be happy I have a mic if we remember what happened the last time I was here. This is not even my mic. This is a borrowed mic. I'm just
I think it needs to be your mic. That I think red mic is I think I love it. Anyway, so I think in some ways I feel that it's not my favorite half season.
There you go. See that. All right. Clyde, I'll let you get settled while I give you my rapid Riker for this half of the season. I think it's interesting. I realize now that we probably should have watched 1 through 7 for the first half because that is before there's the mid-season break by the dates. So my bad on planning. But I will say that episode 7 and like the last 2 for me were probably the strongest. And I think to your point, Paul, it's like it felt very extended. Like it took so long for us to finally get to the 10C that it did feel so like rushed at the end to like have their arrival moment in communicating with them. And so I still enjoyed a lot of this season. I agree with you that Burnham really had like a really lovely I think solidification of her captaincy and like how she decided to use diplomacy at her core. I thought we got a lot of like really great Burnham moments and I have some good hopes for next season based on this season.
Like,
but
just to like, you know, one thing that they did very interestingly, and I didn't notice this the first time I watched it, was like the first episode of season 4 is Kobayashi Maru. Mm-hmm. And you know, and ultimately the president of the Federation, what's her name?
Relic
goes like, can you make the tough choice?
Yeah.
And like in the end, like she makes the tough choice in letting mm-hmm. Book go. Yeah. But for whatever reason, like it got kind of like lost in the moment. And it's only because we watched it like, you know, in such like binge condensed format. Time. Mm-hmm. That I was able to go like, oh, this is what they were trying to do. So anyway, but.
Yeah. Clyde, what's your rapid Riker?
So, you know, I've been trying to think about this, the answer to this question of how did I feel about this? This felt mm-hmm. different. I agree with what I heard you say earlier, Mariah. 7 through 13. Markley Hanson.
Thank you.
That what? Yes, Paul. He's just very suave.
Yeah.
My gut feeling is I didn't love this half of the season. And I've been trying to figure out why. And I think in part, it is I don't like the journey that Book and Tarka was on. I don't like Tarka.
Yeah,
I want to have sympathy. Like, I feel like he's supposed to be somewhat of this sympathetic, tormented character. And I just wanted
punch me in the face.
Somebody to integrate him with a phaser, like early on, like just end this. And then Book and this just recklessness. I get that it's supposed to be about this idea of how we handle pain and how we handle trauma, but something didn't land for me. And I think I'm struggling putting my finger on what it was. And at my base, I'm like, you know, I kind of like a space Western, and this was not a space Western. This was a lot of talking.
It was a lot of, yeah, like diplomacy scenes, which I did, you know, enjoy some of that, like, tete-a-tete, and I do wish there was more of a true like intellectual opponent to Burnham in some of those moments, like someone who could really kind of like give us a true picture, I think, of that other side, because I don't think Tarka and Book were able to really do that for me in that same way. Like I feel way more connected to Book's story than I do Tarka's. And so I have more empathy for his character, especially because he does like come around in the end. But I agree with y'all in that I think we spent so much time trying to get us to sympathize with Tarka that I just, and it never came around enough for me, that I wish I had just like made him a big twirly mustache bad that I didn't care about and got to spend more time with the other characters instead of those weird one-off like moments where characters are trying to tell you something about themselves, but it's at like the height of the action, so we can't actually settle in with their characters. But I think like, yeah, I mean, to me, the core, like Sonequa Martin-Green does like such an incredible job with this part in being this captain. And like, it is so heartbreaking in that last episode when she thinks she's lost Book. Like, I truly feel that. And then that turn to like, I still have to be my captain, I thought was like a very incredible and like beautiful moment for her.
Yeah, I would add to that. Sonequa Martin-Green, so Burnham's emotion over Book truly helped me understand, maybe for the first time, how deep their relationship was.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things where they don't, it's not, it's, there's no label to it, mm-hmm. right? There's no design label that we would think, right? It's not a situation where she's like, well, this is my husband, or this, like, for a long time, they're like, they don't really call him her boyfriend. Like, there's no label to it.
They were truly companions for so
long. And so you look at them and you go, okay, well, they have these shared experiences and they have this flirt, you know, and maybe there's some feelings. But it's not until the last few episodes where I start to see how deep their relationship truly is. I kind of wish they would have labeled it. I kind of wish they would have been a little bit more obvious in saying, hey, this is a really deep relationship. And I wonder if that would have changed it for me in watching it the first time, right? Because I'm like, wow, like she's making some moves here.
Like,
and I don't, it kind of makes sense. But
I'm gonna be that guy again. But be I'll that be guy, that guy for please. Like I don't actually understand why she's with Book in the way that she is. Like I don't see.
What do you mean?
Like,
you know, what do you mean?
Well, like I like, you know, Book has an admiration for her, and you can see it how he always talks about her to Tarka, right? Like, you know, mm-hmm. Burnham's gonna do this. Like, you know, if she says she's gonna, like, you know, this is not, you know, so like you could see him like really, really like into her in that way. Like, and I just don't know, what does she see in Book?
This is an easy one for me.
You go for it. Go for it.
To me, leadership is lonely, right?
Okay.
Yeah, it's a very lonely place. Right. And what I see, what she has in Book, is this place where she can truly be herself without expectation, often without responsibility, without all the pressure. She can, like, literally, it's a place where she's been able to let her hair down. It's a place where she's been able to find herself, and he has accepted her. And to your point, Paul, not only has he accepted her, he has loved her for being who she is. And I don't think she gets that anywhere else.
Saru? Like, what can she say to Book that she hasn't said to Saru? I'm just saying.
Saru has tried to throw her in the big brig how many times now? Yeah, he will, like, turn her. If she does not do what he expects a captain to do, Saru has shown he will turn on her.
But I think that's a big difference, too, of like a work friendship and then a romantic relationship. Oh, sure. No,
it might be because I'm watching Suits right now, because apparently my household were Suits people. And I'm watching, like, you know, I'm watching Pearson, like, you know, she has a work relationship, and she has, you know, and it's tricky for her in a way that
season four, trying. You're about season four.
That's right.
With I've never watched just, Suits, but
apparently I'm a Suits person now. But anyway, the point is, like, I can,
you see, will like the rest of them.
Like, I can see how, like, you know, there's a difference between how she treats, you know, her employees and her employee/significant other. Whereas I, when I watch her deal with Book, she, like, it feels like everyone has the same emotional access to her. It maybe just seems, you know, like that's what.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's why I wish so much that we had gotten like a full episode of just their antics between her landing and Discovery coming, because I think we have not been shown. We've just been told what the
exactly
relationship
that's exactly what, like, you know, I see that, you know, she says that I'm really into, but like, I don't, the closest thing I get is the poker scene.
Yeah. The poker scene. Yeah. I'd love to talk about All In, because that was to me a very fun episode, but I also really enjoy whenever we go to these like kind of marketplace worlds in the future and seeing what the structures are like and how similar and yet how different they are. And also the glowworm poker dealer is hysterical.
Yeah, because Mariah loves all types of capitalism in the future, in the past. It's all
love
Mariah.
It so much. I love existing in capitalism.
Klingon marketplace, you know, Ferengi market, Orion market. It's all Mariah.
Hey, it could be bargaining. It doesn't have to exist within capitalism. But I do think, like, I agree with you, Paul. I think All In, which had some really fun direction with Christopher J. Byrne and Jen McGowan. It's written by Sean Cochran. It does a good job. And I know they had brought in someone specifically to direct the poker scenes, who has done like card play scenes. And so I thought there was some really cool attention to detail there of like making sure it feels like an authentic gameplay and like the stakes were there. And I mean, I'm also a sucker for like all the Ocean's movies and heisty stuff. And it gives that vibe in a really fun way. Also, we get to see Owoshakun, I think, in a much more like authentic character moment rather than like a one-off beat.
Oh wow.
Oh wow.
It was Joanne Oh Wow Owoshakun. That was her fight name.
Her fighting name.
Yes.
But yeah, I thought that was really fun.
I mean, I thought that was a really good episode. I thought it was fun. It felt like that to me though. It was a lot, even though, I don't know, this season felt like every set was very dark.
Mm.
That one didn't have the quite as a dark tone. It felt more like your typical Star Trek casino episode, right? Mm-hmm. It's the away mission where they're in a casino or something and they're hijinks. And I really, that's one of the episodes that I really enjoyed and was like, hey, this is fun. Like, this makes sense. Like,
yeah, you know. It felt like Seven. It's like, so Seven But to Connect, which is directed by Lee Rose, written by Terry Hughes Burton and Carlos Cisco, who I love. Carlos Cisco is a great writer. And I thought that one too felt kind of that classic Trek vein, where it is the like big moral quandary of like, how does AI fit within our systems? And like, how do we balance this new technology? Like, I think we've talked about it before. I really love the episodes that take like a really big question and try to synthesize it through the story. And I thought that was an episode that successfully did that.
I enjoy that when you explain it to me, what I'm seeing and not based off face value.
And then All In, you know, does play with those same, I think, classic, you know, the casino night. It has a lot of like fun glances and looks and fight scenes. It's like, I mean, as much as oh my gosh, I'm blanking. The Cybok Star Trek movie. What number is that?
Five.
Yeah, I was like, that opening sequence of the bar with all the weird drag queens and the games and like that CD. It gave me that vibe, and that was like my favorite. I mean, I like, love that movie in weird ways. You have but
a very specific aesthetic, Mariah. It's really. It's off the beaten path. It's very specific.
Listen.
Did she cut herself out?
I didn't do it. That's all I could say.
No. Like, I think like the cliffhanger, everyone. Just listen.
I mean, she's gonna have a great comment when she comes back. It's gonna be fantastic.
Oh, I'm back.
All right, pressure. No pressure, but
better box.
I know there's a big storm moving through, so it was like a little questionable, but I think I'm back. What was I saying? Oh yeah, I love campy weird stuff. Like if I could combine like Showgirls with Star Trek, like that's like
words never spoken before.
I'd have a great time.
Out loud, Clyde.
Out loud.
I mean, for what it's worth, Showgirls combined with Star Trek is probably going to be very popular for a certain demographic.
I mean, I just want to have a good time. I want to be entertained.
I love it. Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained? Okay, let's dive into, I think, where things start to get a little off the rails for I think some of this watching, which is the Rubicon episode, which is our big everyone's in a giant circle talking about what to do episode. Mm-hmm. And then we also have Book and Tarka on their weird little away mission, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I get, you know, the more we, every time we say his name, there's a feeling inside me that just goes, ugh. You know, I think it was Choopy who said it earlier. If you completely removed him, could it have worked? And I'm thinking, it might have been stronger. I mean, I don't know what it is, but I hated Tarka. I absolutely just hated the character. And not in a Osira, like, this is a terrible villain and I hate the villain, but they're doing a really good job at it. You know, this was just like a, I don't know.
Like, just,
oh, actually, I'm mixing them up. This is what happens at this back half for me. But no, Rubicon's where they have to like sneak onto the ship and like all of that nonsense. But we get Nan back, which is fun.
Yeah.
And then,
yes,
like,
I like GMA. Nan.
Yeah, this is like the standoffy episode. Nan's great. I don't know. There was too much Tarka. I think I've just blocked this episode out of my brain.
Like, I think that what you're trying to say, and this is the way I phrase it in my head, Tarka has a face that is equivalent to what bad breath smells like. When Tarka comes on the screen, I go like, bad breath. Have a Mentos.
Like, I felt bad because... What was I can't remember the name of the episode, but his backstory, right?
The Galactic Barrier episode.
Yeah, the Galactic Barrier episode. So this is the payoff, right?
Yeah.
And this is where we're supposed to see his backstory. And we see the connection with whatever the dude's name is. And we're supposed to be drawn in, and he's supposed to be a sympathetic character. And the entire time I am, especially on the rewatch, I'm convincing myself not to fast forward. Like, I'll be honest with you. Like, I'm so tempted. Like, I'm just like, I don't care. Like, I don't care. I don't want to hear about it. Like, it doesn't move me. It did move me the first time or the second time. It's not moving me now. Like, I just want to go. That's how I felt.
It's Oros. And I think to me, I appreciate that I feel like they were trying to make a parallel between Tarka and Oros as Burnham to Book. And like people who saw each other, and that's like the love that is there. But I'm like, then let Tarka and Oros like be in love. And it felt like they just weren't ready to like fully commit to that.
Yep.
In that way. And to me, that would have been more, I don't know why love over friendship has to be more compelling. I get like, I would do a lot of things for a lot of my friends, but to me, it's like, if you're willing to destroy the galaxy, like, to me, that feels like it has to be
no,
like,
just such Earth.
A deep love.
I think you're spot on, Mariah. I mean, there's a should it be and is it, right? I got some deep friends. I got some deep friendships. The truth of the matter is I'm not doing the things I would do for my wife. Like, I can definitely understand burning down the galaxy for my wife. I'm not doing it for, you know, my buddy Gerald. Like, I'm not doing it for him.
So maybe I'm doing this marriage thing wrong, but I've been married for 23 years, and like, you know, and we, you know,
Clyde,
we
have, I'll be this, right back.
Yeah, like, my wife and I have this discussion where we say things like, you know, hey, you know, if it's the fate of the world versus, you know, saving me. And she goes, well, you're gone then, Paul. I go, good, good. And vice versa, right?
Right.
You know, like, I go.
But I think that's why I'm like, but like, doesn't that even, if it was a friend versus the fate of the galaxy,
Yeah, I hear it. To be fair, Petrarca isn't like risking the galaxy, just Earth.
Just Earth. But
which he has no what's
he's rising.
Exactly. I will say this, like, you know, like what I feel like they were trying to do was to go like, here's this person who he, as close as Tarka can feel love for, like, and mm-hmm. he betrayed that. And he's trying to do everything he can to undo that past mistake, aside from mm-hmm. go travel through time, because the temporal cords are ironclad, you know. But like, you know,
yeah, it seems so extreme.
Clyde, so
no, like, I'm with Mariah where she's going. Like, if we're talking about redemption and we're talking about like, I messed up, you can't burn down the galaxy to make up for,
like you're talking with as someone who may have some morals, but Tarka has no morals. I totally relate to Tarka. If I understood the feeling of guilt, which, you know, I have an algorithm that helps me understand, but like, you know, but I can see how someone could go like, oh well, I don't actually care about this stuff. I don't care about people. I just care about this dude that may or may not be in a multi-dimensional multiverse universe, other alternate universe. So anyway,
and I guess that's my other issue is like with Book, I'm going, I get it. You're in trauma, like you're hurt. There's grief. Get that. Tarka tells the whole circle of people, I can do this. I know how to stop it. Like, if we pull the power, like, I got this. That's what he tells people. Yeah. They decide, no. Book's right there. They steal the spore drive. They go to this thing. They blow it up. And it turns out, hey, guess what? It's not there. At that point, Tarka loses all credibility. Mm-hmm. But no, Book's like, I still rock with you. No, man, he liked that. That was the oops, it's not there. I was wrong. You said 100% it's here. This is gonna do it. That's what you said. And it made matters worse. Book should have been out at that point and go, you know what, dude? You are trouble.
And this is why I have such a hard time with Book in this, like, you know, in this season. Because, like, you know, for all of it, as much trauma as he's gone through, which, you know, he met his, like, nephew, like, for a month, you know.
I mean, his whole planet and whole family are gone.
They're gone.
But he's been away for a while. Yes. You know, 100%.
Doesn't that make it even worse that you were gone for so long when you finally have reconnected?
And there's this feeling of, like, oh, I will go back home. And I'll spend the time eventually. I'm just doing stuff now, but I'm going home soon. And then you don't get the chance to ever do it again.
But then, like, you know, you're that person. Then you go like, but I will risk war with, like, you know, this alien species who on a whim makes, like, you know, this 5 light-year-old, like, you know, like dredge. Like, you know, like.
Yeah. Like to me, like, to your point, Paul, I think if. To me, the more logical place, like I think you and Clyde have both said, is like that first time Tarka is wrong, that's when you go, okay, I followed you because to me, this was a simple solution. We were going to turn the power off. I understood this. This to me seemed like a great alternative to just like, let's wait and see, you know? But yeah, to y'all's point, as soon as that didn't work, I'd be like, I don't know, buddy, like, can we rethink this? I think I'm out. Because as soon as you're on that planet with him, to me, as soon as I'm on that planet with him and I hear his backstory, I would realize this isn't about actually solving the problem. This is about something of selfish intent.
Sure, sure. Like, and to go with what Clyde said, like, you know, I think that's why I expect nothing of Tarka. Tarka's a sociopath. He doesn't care about, and you can whatever reasons that they are, whether he grew up in the Emerald Chain and so like blah blah blah, it doesn't matter, right? You know, he is like, you know, he doesn't care about anyone, and that's fine. But Book, I expect a little more from him, especially since he's with Burnham. And yeah. I say this all the time to people, you know, I go, the person that you pick as your partner tells me more about you than you do. So in a way, the person that Burnham picks tells me more about her than watching her. And like, to me, I go like, you're picking someone who is like not great. And I understand he has trauma, but like, you know, but like there, it's not great right now.
But he's so handsome. I mean,
he's so
there
handsome.
You go. And that's what it is. You guys are super people. You know,
but they're so hot though. Like,
I don't disagree. That's not the point. The point is, but like, you know, I'm gonna tell you right now, if I'm gonna pick a captain to save the galaxy, hotness is gonna be very low on the priority.
I guess.
I'm just saying, like,
I'm like, you got Admiral Vance and Burnham and but like, this is a hot cast, y'all.
I'm just saying, if I woke up tomorrow and looked in the mirror and I look like Book, mm-hmm. I'm going directly to church and thanking somebody and just woohoo. I mean, it's a new day. I'm just saying, it's a new day. I'd have, you know, like hair. It'd be great. Like,
I would tell you, like, not to, if I wake up tomorrow and I look like Book, nothing changes except how the world treats me. Inside, I'm the same. I'm the same effing person. That's, you know.
Okay, let's jump into so The Galactic Barrier was directed by Deborah Campiar, written by Anne Coffell Saunders, and then Rosetta, which is our next episode, is directed by Jeff Bird and Jen McGowan, written by Terry Hughes Burton. This one was I always love all the episodes where we actually get to go to a different freaking planet, because that's sure. what I want. No, I want us exploring the galaxy, doing these fun little jaunts.
Clyde wants spaceship battles. You want little new planets. It's a fair thing. You can get all of that in Star Trek for $2 an episode.
And to be honest with you, I think this is, look, I love Discovery. I absolutely love Discovery. Sure. I love the characters. I think that this season we got to see a lot out of Detmer. We got a lot to see out of Owo. I mean, I can't wait till we start talking about Janet Reno. That was amazing. But I think this is also what we're seeing here, and what we're talking about is why Strange New Worlds is so popular. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like at its heart, Discovery was like, let's do something different. Let's do something edgy. And Strange New Worlds was like, yeah, you know what? Let's just go back to the formula that worked. And people love it. It's like, I'm tuning in for that every week.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I was talking to someone recently who had never grown up watching Star Trek, and they love Discovery, and they've never watched any of the other shows. They're like, oh, I checked out Strange New Worlds, but I wasn't that like into it, but they love Discovery.
I have a friend who was not into Strange New Worlds. He is into Deep Space Nine, but he couldn't get into Discovery. He couldn't get into any of the new stuff. Even Strange New Worlds, and I was going like, "Oh, this is really interesting." Like, people have different access points.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, it was so funny. They're like, "Oh, there's more Star Trek." They had like no, this was their only Star Trek, and I was like, "That's kind of beautiful and interesting." But I think it's to the point of like there is something for everybody. And I think Rosetta was like. To me, it has a lot of those classic tropes, but I think it's packaged in the Star Trek Discovery way, right? Like it's the hijinks on the planet. Something goes awry. Everyone's like not able to function the way that they normally function. And I think those are those like hijinksy types of episodes that I enjoy, because it is like if you took away people's like normal character tropes and their normal archetypes, and then like what happens when you change and shift that in this particular mission.
Sure, sure. Like, I really want to understand that sounds aggressive in a way. Like, the choice to make, like, people communicate through farts. Like, you know, like, I it's a very interesting way. Like, you know.
It's like a pheromone.
I understand. But, like, you know, like, so imagine I fart and I give you a light map so you can tell which part of the fart to smell so you can have. So,
I mean, it's literally how some animals communicate.
When did we decide that this was a fart? Did I miss that? Well,
I have never decided that's what it is. I think they released a pheromone and like.
I thought it was just emotion. I never thought it was I didn't think of it as a fart. I thought it was emotion and light, but okay. Yeah.
anyway, it's just a very interesting way to go about it. Like, you know, and for those who really care, I would say that farts can be considered a hydrocarbon. So,
okay, so, you know, Karng says in the chat, he says, he's talking to Chupi, and he says, I'm still not a real fan of the emotion-based hydrocarbons as a way to communicate, right? Here's the thing. I thought it was incredibly complex. Mm-hmm. But at this point in Star Trek lore,
sure,
I felt like I was almost going, you know what? Kudos for coming up for something that wasn't an easy solve. Mm-hmm. Because with all of the alien species and the universal translator and every just thing in sci-fi in general, where you're trying to communicate with the species, they were trying to come up with something different, something that especially us as Star Trek fans weren't go, yeah, I've seen that in mm-hmm. Battlestar Galactica. I've seen that in Babylon 5. Mm-hmm. I've seen that in like something where you go, yeah, I know what's happening. They came up with something new. And I was okay.
No, it's interesting. Like, you know, it's no, like, you know, Picard and what's his name at, you know, like Shaka when the walls fell.
But yes. Like, you know, Darmok. Yes.
I love this.
I mean, that is
Mona. I just tuned in and heard communication with farts. Nice.
Context is everything. Listen, I mean, to your point,
which is what the lights are about, right? Like, you know, it all.
But to your point, Paul, the episode of Darmok mm-hmm. is probably the gold standard in alien communication. 100%. And so, if you're trying to compete with that, I mean, it's going to be tough. And I feel like they took their shot.
I mean, it's whether also after the movie Arrival came out, and so I feel like.
Yes.
Which really, so I have a thing to admit. I did not watch Rival until like a month and a half ago. And then I watched this and I went, oh, wow, this is just like a Rival.
Well, both this and, you know, and Rival took an hour and a half for you to learn English, you know, so like, let's make a movie about learning English.
But I wonder, anyway, I was like, I wonder if there's like a paper that's about like the brain. I was like, there has to be like a book they're referencing about how to develop communication between, you know, different species. Anyway, I was like, there must be some similarities of like how they decided to do this whole thing. But anyway.
If I'm going to be more generous, I'm not going to take my personal taste aside and just be objective about it. Like the idea of like being able to create language from like, you know, just chemically, like, you know, here's my thought and like I can just blow my thought at you and you'll get my whole complete thought, whether it be how I feel or a story that I have or like math equations. I mean, it's pretty slick, you know. Imagine if, like, you know, let's say bees, like, you know, just grew up to be like, you know, galaxy changing entities, like, you know, how would they communicate if it's based from like, you know, their pheromone thing. I think that's pretty interesting. I think the execution of it is not very cinematic.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the reveal of species tendency was cool. I appreciated that they didn't look like humanoids, because I do think Star Trek has a tendency to make all alien life form humanoid in some way, shape, or form.
Because the entire council of the circle were all humanoids.
Because bipeds rock, man. It's convergent evolution, baby.
But it's, yeah, I just found it really interesting and to see how that was like all put together. And you know, it almost felt like, I mean, I wonder if it's similar to like, I mean, jellyfish kind of communicate with like pheromones and lights. You know, there's like different, I think, elements. Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. Jellyfish communicate at all.
I mean, they light up and they can excrete different things.
That doesn't mean anything.
I don't know if they communicate, but something happens.
But it looked very Cthulhu-esque, like, you know, Lovecraft kind of thing.
Very Lovecraftian.
Like whale plus Cthulhu. I go like, okay. I mean, like watching it this time, I go like, huh. Okay, that you took your shot. Like here's a species that developed in a gas giant. That, you know, I thought it was interesting. It was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing to me, it's like, to me, the hydrocarbons were really like their version of tone, right? Like we all speak English, but we all sound different. We use different tones to mean different things. You can tell when someone's angry versus when they're sad based on the inflections in their voice. So to me, it's just a different way that inflection is perceived without the ability of auditory language.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear you. And, you know, and it's like, you remember Star Trek 4 where, like, you know, the answer is whales.
Yeah, whales. The one with the whales.
Like, I mean, I was kind of, in some ways, like, this could literally have been that. Like, you know, like, it could have been.
I remember I was like, I can't believe they didn't just be like, we should just get Book to communicate with them because Book can talk to all life forms.
And he did a little bit at the end.
At the end. And I'm just like, if they had just like, once they figured it out, radioed and been like, Book, you can communicate with them. Come back. Like, I don't know. Or if he had just been like, F you, Tarka, at the point where he should have been like, F you, Tarka, he could have been on the ship and we could have gotten there and gotten to our president, Stacey Abrams, way faster. One day. One day. Anyway, so Species Tensi, when we finally get the reveal, that is directed by Olatunde Onsunsame, written by Kyle Jaro, and then the last episode, Coming Home, also Olatunde Onsunsame, written by Michelle Paradise. It felt like, I will say, the like long narration at the end, I did almost feel like, is this going to be their final?
Sure.
I feel like a lot of streaming services find a way to button up, or streaming shows have to find a way to button up every single season in a way that would be satisfying in case they don't get renewed because of how unstable all these places are. But
word.
But I will say, and I think it's been said before, most streaming shows do not get to 5 seasons. So kudos to Discovery.
Flagship.
It is our flagship. I'm really sad it's ending. But I think, and some things I wanted to bring up too, I loved seeing the Vance and Tilly combo. And I hope that that's maybe something that we get to see more of into season 5. And I hope is like a precedent that might be kept if it is confirmed that that's like the time frame that Academy is going to be taking place, which is seeming like potentially more and more that is the case.
Really? Like 900 years in the future?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the rebuilding of the Academy.
Yeah.
Which I think leaves the door open for all of this cast to come back in some way for guest spots, which I think is smart.
I agree. I think there's a lot about this that I like. So I did love the Vance and Tilly. I actually liked the president quite a bit too. I definitely liked her more on the rewatch. Mm-hmm. You know, I think this was a great setup for an Academy show. When I think about what Tilly's role and kind of mentoring the cadets and things like that really did go, I kind of was thinking like, man, this is a nice little, like, if we're getting a peek here, I'm watching. So I like that. But I wanted to ask this. Can you go back and remember the first time? And did you think Book was dead?
No. I could only hope. I mean,
whoa.
Penalty box.
I didn't think they would do that to Burnham after all of the other loss that she's had.
Oh, that's why I think they should do it. Because, like, there's a history of captains, like, having very lonely lives. In Star Trek. You know, Sisko's the only one with, like, you know, a kid, if I'm not mistaken. Like, you know.
Yes, but he lost Jennifer.
Yeah, no, I know. It's tragic, you know. I guess Picard has a kid now, like his Borg kid, but like, you know.
His Nepo baby, yeah.
Nepo baby, like, you know. That's why they have, you know, hard lives. Because, like, Nepo, there's nothing worse than a Nepo baby.
I also really loved Book and Reno together. I was like, you know, mad that Book stayed with Tarka for as long, but I did really enjoy like their kind of problem solving abilities together. Also just like, man, Jet Reno really just elevates every scene.
Yeah.
Like voiceover at the end with the like already making a cocktail bobcat, just like the one-liners.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, would you say you like the scene with Book and Reno? Was it Book and Reno, or is it just Reno with any scene that she's in? Because Reno with Tao was good. Reno or Adira. Reno with Stamets is just hysterical. I love that. That is just amazing.
So I would say like one of the reasons why I think Reno works so well is because she plays her archetype. Mm-hmm. She's just a surly, like, you know,
sarcastic
engineer. Yeah, like the smarty pants. She's House.
Yeah.
You know, she's basically in Space House.
Yeah, but I also think that part of it is that she provides balance. Because if you take Reno out, the show's really heavy.
Yeah, no.
Right? Like, it's a bunch of, like, especially this season, it's a bunch of sad, like, stressed out people who we've dealt with more trauma in this season. Like, everybody's got trauma. Like, everybody, mm-hmm. like, poor Colbert.
Not Linus. Trying to do,
Linus. I felt like they used to give Tilly some of that lighten up, right? With like a lot of the one-liners and stuff. And I kind of miss some of those aspects to Tilly, like the excitement, the a bit of the naivete, which was like there. And obviously she's grown, but I do miss some of the whimsy.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful that comes back now that she's like, the character is built to being, I think, a little bit more sure in her choices. Mm-hmm. But I think, to Chupi's point too, it's like Reno gives a very lovely speech about like the loss of their wife and like is so able to balance, like, to your point, Clyde, like it's the levity, but also the ability to still be heartful and truthful and like, I don't know, Tignataro.
I will say that, like, you know, like what they do, what she does very well in as a character is like, She keeps it locked down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, she handles her shit, and then, like, you know, until, like, you know, and she can share when it's necessary, but like when it's not necessary, you know, get to work. That's her vibe, right?
Chew the licorice. Yeah,
yeah. But I think part of it though is it's interesting because I look at this crew. I love this crew, but somehow they seem a bit young. Like, they all seem a little bit young as a crew goes, as a senior staff. But Reno, but Reno has this sense of like maturity, of security. Like,
you know, I think it's like her and Culber. You know, you could, like, if Culber's also in a scene, I feel very stable in what Culber's about to deliver.
Until he goes like, I'm about to fall apart, everyone.
Yes,
but to be fair. Like, he's the one where I go like, oh, okay, I can accept that. I accept that when he goes like, hey, I'm having a hard time keeping it together, because he doesn't really, because here's what he does. He denies it first.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine, and that's how people deal with stuff. You know, there's denial first. It doesn't go off like immediately how Owushuku went and goes, I need to go down now, Saru. Like, no, like, you know, first you have to. It has to build to that point. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why I like Reno, simply because Reno holds it together. She values holding it together.
Mm-hmm.
So Chupi says what I was thinking, and that is, she's a surly Guinan. You know, look, it's interesting. Watching this show has forced me to come to terms with things about my viewing habits that I feel like are kind of they're more simplistic than I probably want to admit, and
they're less optimal.
Here's what it is. It's like, man, I really like the hero character that I could root for. When you remove that, I'm like, man, something's missing. It's not complex.
That's why you love Shaw so much, right?
Exactly. Yep, that's it. That's exactly it. But I also think what I love is I love a good wise character.
Uh-huh.
When I was watching,
you're embarrassing me, Clyde. I'm right here.
I know. When I was watching This Is Us, and we were podcasting about This Is Us, there's a character.
The doctor came on. The doctor.
No, it's the father, like his Randall's father, William. Sure. What we called William was, we called him the wise Pixar owl, right?
Okay.
Because in Pixar movies, you've got some old, you know, wise character that's retired, but they just got all this wisdom. And for whatever reason, it roots you in like, oh man, I just like that. So anytime you introduce that character, there's something, Mariah, use the word like safe and secure. Like there's something about that wise mentor character that just kind of roots everything. It's what Guinan was. Like Guinan, for the most part, through every episode, she was never shaken about anything. That's what Reno is. And so when Reno steps into the scene, it's like, I don't know what's going to happen, but Reno's here, so it's okay. And I think having Reno on Tarko's and Book's ship made me go, I don't know what's going to happen, but they're not going to destroy that DMA. They're not going to get the controller because Reno's there. And Reno's there, it's all going to be okay.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. Any predictions going into season 5?
Well, it's a treasure hunt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like predictions is hard. Like what there are wants that I want. Like I, of course, I want Larka, you know, because like, because
Larka? It should,
Lorca, sorry. I want Lorca because like, mm-hmm. I think that would be a great bookmark. But like, you know, what do you think they're trying to find? It's been hidden for centuries, they say.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an idea? I have an idea.
I'm wondering if it has something to do with the Genesis machine.
Oh, ooh. Oh yeah.
Like, that would be my guess.
I think like I put all my money on Peanut Hamper. Boom!
It's back, baby. It's Peanut Hamper time.
Well done. That was good. I did not see that one coming. You got me.
Centuries. Wow. Very good. Anyway.
Now, I don't know about predictions for this season. And I want to tread lightly here. I mean, I guess my question at this point is, what's going to be the evolution of Burnham, right? We've been on this journey with Burnham for coming up on 5 seasons now, and we've seen Burnham being stripped of everything, being the heir apparent, but then being stripped of everything, being elevated, being refusing the leadership, the chair, then accepting the chair, coming to terms with who they are. And now we've seen them go through a whole season sitting in the seat and doing really well. What's the next evolution for Burnham as a captain? And then what do we see? I think I'm curious about how the people around her are going to grow. Mm-hmm. And are we going to get new characters? A good new character, not a Barkley new character, but a good new character.
I have thoughts about that, Clyde. What I would want is for everyone not to grow. I would like them to just like, hey, let's just see they've made it, and let's just see this crew do it. You know, like have that season where like, you know, they're just
doing it, just
being awesome. You know, like just awesome up without the trauma, without, you know.
Yeah, I think to me, it's like I want to feel that same stability with our core characters. I want Tilly, Saru, and Burnham to feel to be their archetypes this whole season. I think there's room for like growth in some areas and that security in the same way that we saw from like Kirk or Spot, you know, like they're learning lessons about themselves that's going to enhance their character, but it's not huge. I don't need big shifts. I'm ready for Tilly to really come into her own and to be a little silly again, or to have some levity there. And then I think the characters I want to see growth from, I feel like Stamets has stalled out a bit. I'm ready for Stamets to have some big changes or some things happening. And then I'm excited to see what they do with Adira, because Adira is our youngest character and I think has the most room for growth.
Which is strange because in some ways she's the oldest character. They're the oldest character.
Yeah.
With the symbiote.
I mean, yeah, that's true.
What do you think the future of this Saru romance is?
Oh, I'm
is
all there in. A
future? You're all in?
I'm all in.
I buy that romance so much more than Book and Burnham.
I'm ready for Saru and the president.
US and Kelpian Vulcan babies. Is that what you're looking for?
I'm ready for them to be like the Riker Deanna, you know? Yeah,
like, could you see the relationship come about? Like, I go, oh, I'm watching them get together. There's that meet cute. There's, you know, mm-hmm. all the stuff. I go like, oh, I want them to get together. Like, you know,
it's actually really sweet. It's a really sweet meet cute, and it's like, oh, look at them. They're kind of shy and awkward. I love
the tea exchange. Uh-huh. It's so cute. Anyway, I'm excited. I hope it's lovely. I hope they don't. I hope no one dies. I can't handle if one of them dies.
You know, I guess my big thing, the reason why I bring that up is it's like every time we get a new season, there's like time passes mm-hmm. and it'd be really easy for them just to be like, oh, yeah, it didn't work out and just not do it. I do want to see more of it.
Yeah. Oh, and Mona brings up, I hope they bring Gray back as well. I'd like to see what Gray has been up to with the Trill world. I think that's always really fun. Yeah. I think that's where I'm at. I want Book to come back, and I want some more Will They, Won't They with Book and Burnham.
But Book's in a lot of trouble, though, isn't he?
I mean, seemingly. It seems like a pretty nice punishment of just, we're going to go make you work with refugees rather than, like, throw you in the brig.
They stole the prototype of the spore drive, and that mm-hmm. thing blew up.
Yeah.
So unless he grabbed it.
Well, no. Like you can just program it. Because, like, you know, it's not like they stole the plans. You know? And, you know, here's a place where programmable matter is all the rage.
Well, so will we see more spore drive enabled ships?
Well, once again, there are only two people in the universe who can pilot one.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like they're probably going to have to figure out alternative means. Yeah.
I hear there's a desert planet where there's like there's spice that can help, like, you know.
Yeah. And then how do you want the show to end? How do you want season 5 to come to a close?
I don't.
Yeah.
I want it to be a surprise and be like, surprise, season 6 coming next year.
Like, for me, I would just like it to end where the Federation is kind of like back.
Yeah, you know? Make the Academy more stable.
Yeah, you know, just like, you know, like this, for all of it, everything in the future is about repairing the universe or repairing to get us back to where we were. Like, you know, you're basically in the version of Star Trek Mad Max, right? Mm-hmm. And now like you're at a place where you're trying to rebuild. And I would like to see, you know, like the seeds of that being rebuilt. Like we have now the lithium, and now we don't have, you know, we have like apparently space jellyfish who are helping us clean up their toxic mess. Just, you know, just people like, you know, being happy.
That's what
Star Trek is people being happy.
Yeah, I wanted to come to, they finally get to go on their 5-year science mission.
Okay. Like, I will say this, though. Like, where the hell are they going to really go? Because they can go anywhere.
I mean, so, that's like, fun, right?
Is it? Is it, like, one of the things that that made Star Trek was that we, at least when they were discussing it, we need to go fast enough that our adventures feel like new, but not so fast that, you know, places still seem far. So, you know, that's why like warp is maxed out at 10. And that's why mm-hmm. you can like do local bits of, you know, but like Bajor is far from Earth. Like, you know, the Delta Quadrant is very far from the Alpha Quadrant. But with the Spore Drive, you can go anywhere all at once. Like, you know, it's Michelle Yeoh again. Boom. She's the queen.
Yeah. Mike brings up Calypso. I hope they connect to that.
Yeah, there's some good comments in the chat that I want to get to. I will say I'm struggling to know what I want. I know what I don't want. Mm. I don't want to jump in the future where we see them all gray and older. And I'm like, we just came 930 years.
You don't want the Harry Potter? The future.
I mean we just came 930 years in the future.
Yeah,
I don't need any more. Like, we're good. Like,
like maybe that, like a 10-year jump where you're like, oh, people with families, or like, I don't know.
Maybe. I like Stu says they all sit around playing poker. That's I think right. That would be a nice nod.
And then Burnham goes like, I should have done this much long, much sooner.
Yeah. Chupi said, or Chupi says, I wanted to be, and they all stayed on the ship and went on adventures. I could dig that. Mm-hmm. Mona says, maybe they end with a talk of the academy opening up after all those years. Mariah, I think you alluded to something like that.
Or how?
Yeah,
about,
I think
like...
the academy has reopened, but yeah, it would be, you know, maybe they're all teachers. And maybe, oh, what if I was like a sneaky ooh, person?
We have a Mariah fan theory. Ooh, here we go.
They all decide to just become professors. And so it's like the entire cast, core cast, is now just on Academy, baby.
I would definitely tune in for that. So, okay. So think about this logically.
Logically, okay.
Who from Discovery do you really think might end up on an Academy show? All of them isn't an answer.
I feel like Tilly has already been set up fairly.
Yeah, absolutely.
For that. I feel like Vance would make sense in some way.
What about Stamets? He originally, in like season one, he was going to quit.
And go to the Science Academy.
And be a professor, yeah.
Let me ask you this. Would you want Stamets to be your teacher? Come on.
He's taught Tilly and
Adira. Was he a really good teacher to Tilly, or was Tilly just gifted despite, you know, Stamets's, like, you know, jerkness? Come on,
book,
be fair.
Book would be great. Book should teach a class on like how to parlay with with Space shady worms. Characters. Like, yeah.
You go.
I was going to say, I'd love Reno, but I think we heard that Reno's out. Like, Tig Notaro. Did we hear that Tig Notaro's out?
I think Tig's in this season in some way, but I think in a smaller capacity. Yeah.
Because I just think that she's got some other stuff going on, that the actress has some other stuff going on.
For me, the only person that works is Tilly. I wouldn't want anyone else. Like, as far as, it's not what I wouldn't want. Like, if I were an Academy student, like, who would I want to learn from? Tilly fits. She used to be, we saw her as a cadet. She remembers what it is to not know how to do stuff. Everyone else is a bit of a hard ass in a way. Like, you don't want Burnham as your teacher. Oh my God. The expectations that she has. Oh my God. Like, you know, she went through some like real crap on Vulcan.
Yeah. Mike mentions Bryce and Reese. I feel like Bryce was set up to maybe have that role.
That actor booked something else, and that's why we keep seeing that other guy on the bridge instead. Gotcha. The newer dude.
Okay, because I know he was like, why can't you go? And he's like, oh, he's doing something for, you know, something else. Okay, that might make sense. What about Owo? Like, I'd be down to see Owo.
Yeah.
What would you want Owo? What does Owo teach?
She piloting. Can teach self-defense. Then she could, well, Detmer's the pilot.
Yeah, that's true. Saru would be interesting, but I think he's gonna an ambassador.
Yeah, like I think there should be like a whole new cast plus Tilly. I think Tilly is the obvious choice to you know.
Well, I think you're probably right though. I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
Well, we shall see. So the new season comes out April. Oh my gosh.
24, I thought.
Four?
Thought it was April 4.
April 4th, yes. Starting with the Red Directive.
Red Directive. Like, you know, it's whenever they have directive, like, you know, I always
Prime
think like
directive.
and there was a Voyager one, the Omega Directive. Mm-hmm. You know, and so like I just hope it's not goofy. Like I hope it's cool, as you know.
Yeah.
You know.
So. I think it's going to be pretty cool. All right, y'all. So schedule wise, next week we are off, and then the week after we're back for the new season. It's going to be a good time. If you like this episode, you can subscribe, rate, and review on Apple and on Spotify. You can join us at StarTrekPod.com to find links to our Patreon and other places you can interact with us. We are over on Twitter as well as on Instagram at StarTrekPod. Thank you, Karen, for helping us out over on the crazy place that is X. I think, do we get two episodes on the first? We have a comment there. The first night. Yes, we do. We get Red Directive and Under the Twin Moons. So double header night one.
They're going to like Tatooine.
I do like when they kind of make fun of Star Wars, yeah, like they did in Lower Decks. anything else y'all want to plug or mention?
Yeah, if you wanna, anyone wanna join a Patreon to help Clyde look more like Book, just let us know.
We can start a special fund.
That's right.
I mean, I would say, hey, look, there's still watch-alongs going on. I am thinking about maybe next week, you know, maybe around this time, doing a watch-along. You know, we'll see, something to get us along, ready for the next season.
Yeah.
You know what I want to do? I want to do a watch-along of Star Trek V with Mariah.
Yes.
That's what I want to do. I want to have a Star Trek V, you know, and just Mariah commentary throughout the whole bit.
We can do a watch along. Like, do you want to record the watch along? You guys let us know. Comment on the Slack or on our social media if you want us to do a watch along where you can hit play with us.
Yeah. Hashtag justice for episode for movie 5.
Justice for 5. The fan hashtag dance. There's so many things in that movie.
That's right. Like, what does God need with a starship?
That go hike a mountain. All right, y'all. We will see you for the premiere on the 4th. Thank you so much. Live long and prosper. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Laters.